We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, six straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no, there's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. We think this is episode 547. You guys listening can look at your phone and figure that out. We didn't want to take the extra 5 seconds to do that. Scott, we got Bob back. Scott, what's up? Sunday. See, I'm all over the place. It's Sunday after the game. Yankees couldn't complete the sweep. How you doing?
Good. Another series win. Again, my prediction of the Orioles losses is out the window, so it's all good. We won the series. Name of the game, that's it. Just keep winning these series. And they've done that for quite some time now. So unfortunately, Jordan Montgomery couldn't back it up to what he did with the Rays. I was looking forward to that. Plus, I was also looking forward to the Means-Montgomery matchup. That didn't happen. But yeah, they won the series at the end of the day. That is the important thing. Keep winning series, no matter who's out there, because this lineup's getting a little weird.
No matter who's out there, it is really the takeaway from the weekend, because it was kind of like a spring training end of March lineup they trotted out there on Friday when we had Hicks get scratched, Giancarlo get scratched, and then Gio's not in the lineup, I guess from his knee soreness from last weekend when he made that diving play. But if Gio saves the game, saves the series, frankly, with that three-run home run. Because if he doesn't pinch hit and hit that home run, it's a totally different weekend.
Yeah, then they lose 2 of 3 and they don't win the series. So yes, totally different weekend then. And it doesn't, you know, continue the streak of winning these series or not losing a series, I should say. But that was one of those moves, man. It was one of those moves where I don't know what made Boone do that. What made Boone say, okay, he can't start, want to give him the day. But this is such an important moment. We think Gio has a good opportunity to do something here and put him out there, put the bat in his hands. And it was,
You said that to me, you messaged us that and you were like, it was a decision that Boone made. What do you, of course you pinch it for Tyler Wade. What are you talking about?
Because it's Aaron Boone. I mean,
you don't think he can read a scoreboard?
He had a day off. No, I don't think it's as clean cut as that. He had a day off. They were resting him. How many times do we see when there's a rest day? That's it. There's a rest day. That is what it is. He didn't give him the full load of the day, but obviously felt good enough for him to go out there and swing the bat in a pinch hit situation. How many times do we hear so-and-so is available for a pinch hit situation? It never happens. It's just like a way of saying it's not that serious. That's kind of like the yes Booth's way of saying, he's there. It's Aaron Boone being able to deflect. He's there, but I will never in a million years use him. And it happened. They used him.
But if usually it happens in the eighth or ninth inning and the guy doesn't really play, maybe he plays half an inning in the field or none at all if they're losing the game and he pinch hits and then that's the end of the inning. I get what you're saying there because he
ended up goes out to short. I mean, he goes out and plays
end up playing four and a half innings, right? Or three and a half innings of after the pinch hit. You know, I understand that. He was probably trying to steal, probably thinking, okay, we're going into Baltimore. I don't need to put I don't want to say A lineup because it's not an A lineup. I don't even need to put my C+ lineup out there. I can put my D minus D's get degrees lineup out there and try and steal a win. And then he had to come with Gio. Gio, by the way, he's been so good. I don't want to say they're most consistent.
Most consistent. I think most consistent is easy. I think most consistent is probably the
Judge. The right Judge, thing is, for this year. Judge has the biggest numbers.
Yeah.
Stanton had the 2-week hot streak, and then Gio's kind of just been steady Eddie there the whole time.
Yep, for sure. For sure. And I mean, that was a big moment. And I got to give, as much as we're shitting on Boone in moments, I'm going to give him credit for this one because he did dust off the, the old Gio with the busted knee or the sore knee and give him a bat and give him the opportunity. So I like it.
Well, so we said maybe he was trying to steal a win on Friday by resting guys. He also rested Chapman and it was a 2 days in a row situation because he didn't pitch on Thursday in Tampa because the Yankees got crushed, so they didn't need him. And I heard the excuse, I think Michael Kay said it on the broadcast, when how they've been showing that like bullpen like usage card or something where it has like a chart with each. I actually kind of like the chart. I think it's useful. But
it's a good chart.
But he said Aroldis Chapman had pitched 4 out of the last 5 days. That's true. He also, if you look at it a different way, had pitched 2 out of the last 4 days. Both are true. So I don't understand exactly why he needed to have 2 off days in a row there. Because they had
Do you think this comes down to the load management as well? I mean, I think that he saw an opportunity to give him a day off with, testing some other, I think throughout the season, first of all, you have to pressure test some guys and to see what they're, what they're worth in different moments. So giving him an extra day, I don't hate it. I want Chapman, on top of his game. This, we talked about it the last episode. There's a long stretch. This is a big road trip that they're about to be on. Want him fresh. Got no problem giving him an extra day when we're talking about a Baltimore game.
But now he has the whole weekend off because they didn't need him on Saturday or Sunday. And that's the risk you run when you do that. It's that you don't know what's going to happen on Saturday or Sunday. The exact situation that happened. You could win a game big and then you could lose a game and not need him. And then now he hasn't pitched 4 days in a row. So now they're likely going to have to get him in Monday's game no matter what the score is.
Okay. Again, I think when you're at Baltimore, one, it's a low percentage opportunity chance that there's going to be a close game in the ninth inning. I feel like there aren't very many times that actually
is a thing. With this team, can you really confidently say that Yankees team this year?
When they're hitting the ball, then yeah. But in Camden Yards, you gotta believe that they're going to hit the ball. This is what Boone does. I have no problem with the day off. Again, I think part of this is, again, some of this load management. He's been absolutely unbelievable. Give him an extra day. Who knows? He might have said something about it. Hey, could use the day if you don't need me tonight.
Okay, that's obviously the caveat because
he had something with his finger, right? We had there was, when he got pissed off the other night, there was something up with his fingernail or his finger. There was something
that's
going
why
on there.
I
maybe
was
they're giving that thing an extra day.
I was waiting for a post game tweet from one of the beat reporters with Boone saying, "Well, Chapman was dealing with a little something. We wanted to give him an extra." I was really waiting for that tweet because I thought that was going to be the situation. They ended up having to. I don't understand quite the Peralta batter to batter in the ninth inning situation. Like, just give Loaisiga the clean inning. He's been excellent this season. So it's not like an issue I have with Loaisiga. I'm cool with him trying to close out a game, but just give him the clean inning.
Yeah. they wanted to piece it together, apparently. So it worked.
So you're just like, yeah, whatever, it worked.
Yeah, basically. When it works, I don't care. When it works, especially against Baltimore, I don't question that much, to be honest. I'm not analyzing as much because I think it's Baltimore. You get through it. Huh?
What fun is that?
It's fun because those are the games that you don't have to watch with a magnifying glass against the Baltimore Orioles. That's my thing. When I'm looking at some of these other series, it's like I'll question Boone quite a bit. This is my opportunity now to like pump him up a little bit and give him some praise. This is my opportunity to do that. So I'm gonna come with some Boone support because it's not gonna probably last for that long. And it's here, you know, the Gio Urshela giving his guy an extra day. I like it. What a guy. What a player manager.
Well, the Yankees got a situation going on in the outfield now that Hicks is on the shelf and he might be out for an extended period of time. Torn tendon sheath in his left wrist. So
sounds ugly. Anytime you hear like tendon and sheath, it sounds painful.
So I had someone tweet me over the weekend, a screenshot of what the injury is. And then underneath it, they were in a text message. They say it's with their dad and their dad replied. So it's like a nutsack for your wrist because the sheath is like a protector for your wrist. So he tore the protective tendon.
He tore his wrist sack.
So, and this is actually the injury Mark Teixeira had in 2013 and that ended his season. So this could be a season ender for Hicks.
Yeah. When Teixeira went down, do you remember if that was something that was off the regular path of what a sheath tear is as far as recovery?
You mean severity-wise?
Yeah.
I don't know. The article
I don't remember this being a, you know, I didn't cover sheath in my degrees. It didn't cover the sheath section of the wrist.
Okay.
I don't think that existed actually.
That's
I think
it's in the new back. You got to go to the index of the manual.
Yeah, I think it's a new baseball thing. It's like the new age, you know, they're calling it. We just called it the wrist or skin.
Well, so Mark Teixeira got a cortisone shot back then and that didn't help him. And I think that's probably what they gave Aaron Hicks over the weekend. And then he took batting practice and he said it was still hurting him. So I think they'll probably put him on the 10-day IL, see how he feels in 10 days. And if he still can't swing a bat,
they did. Didn't they already put him on the IL?
I think that's what I said. They did put him on the end. So in 10 days, they'll have him swing a bat again. And if it's still bothering him, he's probably going to need surgery.
Yeah.
And that'll end his season.
Yeah.
So with Teixeira's situation, what happened to him, when you rotate your wrist, the tendon will snap in and out of the sheath is gone. And so the tendon sheath just got damaged a little bit and they wanted to make sure that it was sitting right. But they said that if it doesn't get If it doesn't heal itself, then you're kind of screwed and you gotta wait for it to shift or like reheal. And
the shift has to, the shift.
So it's like there's too much movement in your wrist at that point?
Yeah. I think basically...
How many sheaths she shells if it doesn't shift? Sorry.
No, I think basically if it doesn't fix itself, then you're kind of in some trouble. So I guess it's a
stabilizer for the wrist is kind of what it sounds like. I could be completely wrong here, but from what Bob just said about Teixeira, it sounds like some type of, you know, sleeve or some coating that helps protect the wrist so it doesn't come out of joint.
It's a wrist sack.
It's a wrist sack.
No, so this is why they're going to see how he responds to it, but then surgery would be a while, in the words of Aaron Boone. And it's not like Hicks was performing great. He wasn't. So when you just look at the baseball impact, it's not huge, but obviously this shifts guys around in the outfield because Clint Frazier has not been playing well. Brett Gardner has not been playing well. So now you have one outfielder down and then two outfielders that haven't been performing. And you call
Esteban Floreal is looking over here with the hands together gif going like there's my spot in center field. That's my position.
He needs more than one game that obviously they're going to give him because they called up Ryan Lamar, who I didn't know who this was before this afternoon. So
I forgot about the signing when I looked back, I was like, Lamar, okay, here we go.
Someone they signed last December and they added him to the 40 man. They didn't have to take anyone off. So it's an easy add. I think he'll probably be here until Floreal can come up. But people were mad, like, why not give Esteban Floreal the chance? And again, it's because he needs more time. And if they can get by for the next 2 weeks with Ryan Lamar, they got a LeMahieu and a Lamar, which is the French Yankees, then they're going to do it.
This was also an opportunity. It was easy, I think, because when there is another 40-man move made, Lamar's an easy DFA, right? I mean, simple write-off, hit the street, go pick up somewhere else. Yeah, exactly. He knows he's right now playing for an opportunity somewhere else, most likely. And yeah, this does give Florial an opportunity to get a few games under. I think if they see him performing in like four or five games a week, give or take, I would not be surprised if he was up after that, because
he's never played at AAA before though, Scott.
Yeah, I know. I don't think they need to wait with him for that long. I think that there's going to be an opportunity if he's up there and he's playing well and there's a week, 2 weeks, fine. I wouldn't be surprised if they called him up. If Hicks has to go into surgery and there's a long-term thing here, I would not be surprised.
So let's say Hicks is out for a long time. They've got Miguel Andujar, who started in left field on Sunday. And this is an Andujar opportunity as well. Like before we even get to an opportunity that Esteban Florial we think will have, this is Andujar's shot. We didn't think he was going to get another shot.
The Yankees farm system is back, baby. These are the guys we've been hearing about for so long. Andujar gave us a good year where he should have won the Rookie of the Year and then disappeared off of the face of the earth. But we got Gio Urshela because of that. So there was somebody that actually, performed. Now Andujar is trying to Clint Frazier in left field so that he could take that spot. And Florial is trying to Frazier Hicks in center field.
You're all over the map.
It's a resurgence from the old guard of the Yankees minor league system.
Andujar got Wally pipped by Gio at third base, right? Yes. And now Andujar is trying to steal Clint Frazier's job that he barely has right now in left field.
Yep. He has it by default.
What about the center field job, though? Because if Hicks is out, whose job is the center field job?
I mean, I think it's a rental at this point until Florial is ready. Then Florial, if Hicks is still out. I mean, obviously, if Florial's out, that means Hicks is out. And that's the path for me. If that's the case, then yes, full-on Wally Pup situation right now with Esteban Florial going into center field.
And actually, Andujar made a nice play heading back to the wall this afternoon, a play that I feel... Okay, knowing you're shaking your head. Knowing what we know about Miguel Andujar's skills as a defender, that was a pretty good play for him. That's a play that he just gets scared of the wall and then like lets the ball clank off his glove.
Well, let me give you the other side of this. I don't think he realized he was as close to the wall as he was because he hit it pretty hard. So I think he got
what a
little
warning
lucky.
Track is.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he looked down and saw felt it under his feet at that point. But he definitely did hit the wall pretty hard. Good play. I'm glad. Let's give him credit. He knew exactly where that wall was.
And then Clint Frazier's over in right field because Judge has been DHing because Giancarlo Stanton missed the entire weekend with a left quad tightness.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Frazier
here
hit a home
we go
run.
Again.
He feels the heat. He knows Andujar is out there to take his job. That's the job. I mean, left field right now is up for grabs pretty much. And if Andujar can find, a decent stroke, get a little bit of consistency there, one, we know that bat exists. It's a matter of if he can play left field or not. So he sees over there, he sees Clint Frazier coming back in the field, getting that honorable mention for the Golden Glove, and he's rejuvenated out in left.
So Clint Frazier he is changing his batting stance. He's lowering his hands.
Again.
How many times this guy changed his batting stance over the past year? Like whatever he did last year, 2020 worked. Like what happened there? Why did he tweak his batting stance in the offseason?
I don't know, man. He's a hard one to figure out. It's really, really, really surprising to me that this drought has lasted as long as it has. I mean, it's been a long ass time. It's been all season, and he has not really shown
40 games.
Yeah, he hasn't shown much signs of actually coming out of it either. I mean, he had a home run today, but just hasn't really shown anything that's even a longer spurt of positivity at the plate. It's tough. Tough look for him.
The thing is, believe it or not, we're actually 25% of the way through the season. The season's a quarter over.
Yeah.
As of the 40th game on Sunday. So everyone likes to talk in baseball. Like they use June 1st as a milestone date, like before you can really make any conclusions. And fine, if you want to wait two more weeks. But I feel like we're at a sample size now where we can look at things and say, this is either going one way or the other. Like, it's a quarter of a season. That's a decent amount of time.
I think the guys that have, for the most part, come out of April and started to turn their seasons around, because we saw, you know, again, it's pretty much a clear cut line here. April was terrible. May has been much better. And I think as we got out of that, that Cleveland series, you're starting to see people hit the ball a little better. They're you know, some guys have come out of it, but Frazier has not. Brett Gardner has not. There have been,
he's getting worse. Brett Gardner's getting worse.
You could tell Brett Gardner's just old man at this point. Like, the bat speed's, I think, a lot lower. It seems slower. I haven't looked it up, but
one more year
is telling me.
One more year on his contract.
Well, it's just a matter of, you know, what he's doing now is he's a few times in the past few days is that, you know, he's hitting the ball off the end of the bat, flaring it the other way. He just doesn't have much there. He's still moving well, plays defense fine, can run the base as well. So,
well,
he's got value as a defensive fourth outfielder, but the problem is that there's a hole in left field right now. So
we are a quarter of the way through the season, and the Yankees offense that we thought was going to be elite has been mediocre. They're ninth in baseball with a 101 WRC plus. That's basically league average, 1% above league average. But what's kind of telling about that is that they're ninth and their league average means 20 out of the 30 teams, 2/3 of the league is below league average offensively, according to WRC plus. That kind of goes back to the episode I did with Eno Saris.
Yeah.
Offense has just disappeared in the game. And for the Yankees, we knew there weren't going to be a batting average team. They're hitting .223 as a team. Like, that's not that surprising. Like, we thought maybe it can be a little bit better. But the surprising thing is they're only slugging .380 as a team. And the reason that they have they're 22nd in runs scored, so they're a bottom 10 team in runs scored, is because we always knew they're not a batting average team, but they're not hitting home runs and extra base hits to score those runs. So the offense overall, quarter of the way through the season, we've seen spurts of it. Giancarlo was super hot. Judge obviously just hit 4 home runs. Gary hit a home run, 2 home runs, or did he have 1 or 2 home runs this weekend where he got robbed of a home run. But collectively as a unit, is still bad.
Yeah. Again, we've seen some of the team coming out of it, I think, in May. April was just that bad too, where they're going to sink a lot of these numbers. But for the most part, like you said, the offense around the league is down, or you could flip it the other way and just say pitching is significantly up. The reason why is, you know, a lot of things you guys were talking about, the ball, the fact that they're able to move the ball more. It's you know, there's just that many more specialty guys. Again, I was listening to some of the Orioles broadcast talk about just the specialty in baseball and how the pitchers are that much more ahead of where the pitchers where the batters are. They have more analytics available to them and really can control situations a heck of a lot more than batters can. And that's all true. It is true. When you look at how they train, there are a lot of things that pitchers can do that batters cannot, because they don't know what's coming. Unless you're Houston Astros 2017, 18, and 19. But
the Astros have that much
of an advantage.
The Astros are baseball's best offense this year.
Yeah. So maybe they know again.
Maybe they do. I'm not ruling it out, because they're that scummy of a team. But what's extra annoying about them cheating is that, like, they're already a freakishly talented offensive team.
Yeah, I know. That's one of the great confusions of that whole thing. Like, they're already good, very good. You could say that a lot about steroids too, though. A-Rod didn't need steroids.
Right. But then when you do it, and it makes you that much better. So
yeah, you win World Series.
On the flip side, though, takeaways quarter way through the season, the pitching has carried this team. And I think the biggest takeaway is that the roles are a little bit reversed. And we've kind of mentioned this on episodes using our eye test, but the Yankees, as far as innings pitched go, where is it? Their starters rank 5th in innings pitched, while do I have that right? Sorry.
Yankees bullpen ranked in 5th.
Okay. Their starters ranked
bottom 22nd.
Right now, the Yankees starters rank 8th in innings pitched, and their bullpen 18th in innings pitched. That's a role reversal, because since 2018, prior to this year, the Yankees bullpen ranked 5th and their starters ranked 22nd. So the roles have reversed. The starters didn't pitch a lot of innings. The bullpen was carrying the load. Now we're starting to see the starters carry more of the load. We've mentioned this with Boone pushing starters here and there, Herman getting it the seventh inning last weekend, Kluber getting pushed deeper into games. We've seen it anecdotally, but it does actually come out in the stats, in the leaderboards, right there, innings pitched. The roles are reversed. And I think that's the biggest takeaway so far as far as the pitching staff goes.
Do you think any part of this has to do with them identifying what's happening with the offense across the league this year and saying, okay, maybe the third time through, the success rate this year so far has not been what it had been in the past. And they're not the damage is not happening like it was in 2020, 2019, 2018. But so we have a little bit more of a leeway with our starting pitching. I'm wondering if any analytics are saying this because, you know, when you're looking at this, you're seeing Boone push these guys the extra inning, the extra inning and a half, the two innings that we're just not used to doing. And also knowing that how analytical this team is and how deep they rely on these analytics, something's got to be telling them that third time through, this is not as much of a risk as it had been in the past.
You're absolutely right. Because the Yankees would not make this decision solely on the fact that it hasn't worked for us the past 3 years, so we're going to try something different. Because they're stubborn. They believe that their process, you know, Brian Cashman likes to talk about the process. They believe in their process, so they're not going to change just because something hasn't been working if they believe it's the right process. So you're probably right. There's probably deeper analytics that say you can get more value out of your starting pitchers by pushing them deeper than you could in the 18, 19, 20 years.
You know, the one person
Fine.
We don't talk
I don't care.
About.
I really don't care why. I'm
yeah,
happy.
But I'm
it's
curious.
Happening.
I'd like to know. I would like to know why that shift has happened, why that has flipped, because the bullpen's been very good too. And, you know, maybe that is a cause and effect for the amount of pitching that they've done, for the amount of innings that they've thrown, because they haven't had as much pressure on their arms, because the starting pitching has taken a little bit of that pressure off of them, gotten deeper into games. They're just not being relied on as much. One person that we haven't really given that much credit to or really said his name in any serious way is the pitching coach, Matt Blake.
We finally saw his face on the broadcast on Saturday night. Did you see that? Oh, you weren't watching? Yes.
No, that was Mike Harkey.
No.
I love watching Mike Harkey walk
so,
out to the mound, by the way.
Bob, were you watching Yes on Saturday night?
I was not. I wasn't okay. Here.
Matt Blake was with Michael Kay and Kenny Singleton for an entire
in the booth?
Inning.
Oh, cool.
Well, no, he was home because he tested positive for COVID. Right. But he
in
had
the
a
booth.
Camera.
Nobody's in the booth.
He had a camera on him and he was just there. I think it was for the fourth inning the entire time. And we saw his face.
He's not a robot?
So he didn't really say anything too groundbreaking, but saw what he looked like.
I've seen what he looks like. I just don't know what he does. I really have no idea what he does.
Does
They're
the
really
voice
just, nobody
match
talks
the
about
face?
Him.
Yeah. Does the voice match the face?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know he's not an ex-pitcher.
He sounds like a JV high school coach.
Yeah. So, but hey, you can't criticize the results so far. Yankees starting pitching, fifth in WAR, seventh in ERA, eighth in FIP, and like I said, eighth in innings pitched. And the bullpen, first in WAR, third in ERA, second in FIP, 18th in innings pitched. Normally, the Yankees bullpen racked up so much WAR because they were out there every freaking inning. And the more innings you pitch, the more opportunity you have to provide value. But the fact that they're 18th in innings pitch and first in WAR shows you that they're out there less, but they're dominating.
I think that this entire thing has nothing to do with Matt Blake. And I think that Gerrit Cole is actually the one leading
the
conversations
the
in the pitching
pitcher.
Rooms. Yeah. No, I guarantee Gerrit Cole is leading these conversations. Kluber's sitting there like nodding in approval, not saying anything, but nodding in approval, just agreeing with everything that Cole says. Cole just seems like he takes every single one of these guys aside and coaches them up. I feel
the
like he does that.
Bullpen arms too?
Everybody just goes to Garrett.
Well, then you know what? He's underpaid.
That's fine. Great. I think the man is just
$36 million is not enough if he's doing actually coaching up all of the arms.
He's coaching up the pitching coach. He's telling the pitching coach what to do.
Well, I can't wait for Garrett Cole to get his hands on Luis Severino then, because Severino is ramping up and he's faced a group of live hitters, including Jason Dominguez, the next Yankees superstar, hopefully. And I do like, though, that the report is that he could be back anywhere from June to August.
I mean, facing live batters right now in May, throwing up to 96 miles per hour, that's encouraging. It really is. This is much earlier than I expected anything to hear about him throwing at full, you know, at full blow, especially against hitting, especially Jason Dominguez, who's, you know, the prized possession.
Do we know how many pitches he threw?
I mean, does it really matter? Probably not that many, but at the same, like, if you're ramping up to 96 and you're throwing to, you know, to guys that are looking to get reps, real reps, to me, that's a very, very positive sign right now. And he's apparently feels very good. They're talking about him on the broadcast, feeling good, throwing 96 on May 16th. Okay.
So I've been talking to Simon, who we had on to talk about load management a couple of weeks ago. I've been talking to him in DMs about coming back on closer to when Severino comes back, to what it's, you know, a guy recovering from Tommy John surgery and the process there. So I'm curious what he says, because in my guess is that ramping up to 96 is not the thing. It's the number of pitches and the workload that he needs to build up his arm strength, right? So like maybe he threw 10 pitches. Like seriously, he could have only thrown 10 pitches. And then next week he throws 20 pitches. So it's like small baby steps up until you're ready to go every 5 days for 80 to 100 pitches. We're still far away from that.
No, I know. But in when we're talking about May, him facing live batters, I just wasn't expecting to hear that type of report, to be honest.
It's 14 months since surgery.
I know. And I think when we're talking about that recovery, yeah, fastballs are probably the easiest thing to do. It's more, you know, having the feel for the off-speed stuff, being able to snap it off in the same way. I think more so like the pitching elements of pitching are probably the ones that take the longest to come back rather than the actual arm strength, I would assume.
Yeah, probably. And so I was talking about this on Twitter.
unless they take that tendon from the ass and he was just doing squats. Who are we talking about? Where we were doing Tommy John and they take that tendon from their ass and they were just doing squats all day.
I don't remember, but I remember the conversation.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I don't remember who the pitcher was. That's got to be a strong tendon, though, right? Your ass tendon's probably.
What if this new training, Bob, you're going to like this one. What if there's just like a squat gimp, right? A squat gimp in the training room, and he's just got to get his ass tendon so tight so that anytime anybody needs Tommy John surgery,
recycles it.
They go to the gimp. Yeah, they take the ass tendon from the squat gimp and just reload.
That's a good idea. But you're gonna need a couple of them though, because like so each gimp can have two tendons, okay? So, but like then he's got to build that back up. So you're gonna need a stable of gimps.
It's just a couple. You don't have that. Tommy John's not that. I mean, you only use the gimp for like the top notch guys, like the Severinos of the world.
Everyone else gets normal tendons. Not the squat gimp.
Cadaver or animal. Prosthetic, whatever. The GIMP is only for special occasions.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? We've all gone through a lot over the past year plus with COVID. Well, BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in your area, and it's available worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living happier today. You can visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily to see for yourself. Visit betterhelp.com/bronx21. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of experienced professionals. We have a great special offer for our listeners. You can get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/bronx21. One more time, betterhelp.com/bronx21.
So this will dovetail nicely into Bob's segment, but I was talking on Twitter about when Severino does come back, who would be the odd man out in the rotation. And right now, it probably would be Jameson Taillon. A lot will change before Luis Severino comes back. I know Montgomery stunk on Sunday afternoon, but he was coming off his best start this season. Herman's been very consistently good. I don't think they're taking Kluber out of the rotation because of his veteran status and contract situation. And Garrett Cole's the best pitcher on the planet. If you want to say DeGrom's better than him, whatever. You get my point. Okay, Bob, take it away on your segment and what happened and what you did.
Yeah.
What did you do, Bob?
Friday. What was that, Friday or Thursday? I don't even remember what
that was. Thursday. That was Thursday night. All right, I'll take you through the night. Thursday night, I think it's the bottom of the third against the Rays. Taillon gives up a 2-run bomb against Meadows, scores 4-0 Rays. You know, an impulsive tweet, you know, I had the Twitter fingers. I was like, all right. I tweeted, can we accept that Taillon is not good? ? And that tweet absolutely blew up. I mean, I've made a couple mistakes with this tweet. The first one being, I didn't clarify that this was me because then people were giving you guys shit or just the show shit. And that's just like BS because it was my tweet and I should have clarified. But I also screwed up the intent. The intent and the actuality were just drastically different. My intent was to have a tweet to see like where everyone was sort of standing with Taillon. And it turned out I ended up bashing him. The word choice was just terrible. I'm going to own the tweet. I got to own the fact that I think Taillon's shit. But I definitely want to bring it up here to see what you guys actually think. I mean, to this point, he's had a shaky start. He's shown some positives, some flashes. And to be fair, obviously, he's coming back from Tommy John. So he's still getting his feel back. But with that said, he's allowed less than three runs only 3 times out of his 7 starts and has only made it past the 5th once out of all 7 games. And that was expected as well. But the season's long, obviously. The potential is there. And I'm going to leave the floor to you guys to say what you guys...
Real quick, what is the tweet up to as far as likes, retweets, and replies?
All right, so right now, 957 likes, 45 retweets, 37 quote tweets. Oh, now I got to scroll all the way down to find the comments. There's around 250 comments.
Yeah, so
and there was a lot that were for and a lot that were against, but...
Yeah, it was split. It was split. And it's an interesting, you kind of stumbled into ass backwards, an interesting topic. Yeah. And it's Jameson Taillon so far. In 7 starts, 33 innings, he's got a 5.40 ERA. Awful. Like anyone who's ever followed baseball for one day or 100 days or 100 years knows a 5.40 ERA sucks. But his expected ERA is 3. He's got a 4.47 FIP. That's also not very good, but a 3.58 expected FIP. This gets to the eye test versus the nerd test situation. His expected stats are much, much better than his actual stats so far this year. He's got an 11.6 strikeout per 9 rate. That's excellent. 2.16 walks per 9. That's okay. And then a 2.16 home runs per 9. That's terrible. So we've got a situation with Taillon where he's clearly got the stuff because he's striking people out. And that's why you see his FIP, his expected FIP and his expected ERA much lower than his actuals. But then when he misses and he gets hit, he's getting crushed. It's going out of the park. So it's a real difficult analysis that we have so far this season on Taillon. I do not think he sucks, okay? I'm not in the this guy sucks camp. I'm firmly in the he's progressing and I think they have something here, but I'm not going to say he's been good. And it annoys me when some of these advanced metrics people just completely ignore 540 ERA and the fact that he can't get through the fifth inning. And every time he leaves the ball up, it leaves the park and just only looks at his expected stats. Eventually, you got to look at the scoreboard.
So I think one of the things for him, I think the biggest number that I took away from those stats is the 2.16 home runs per nine. So he's getting snake bit when he's leaving leaving balls up in times that are not opportune, right? Like he's not getting away with it. He's missing the zone in opportunities when guys are looking for whatever he's throwing and they're taking advantage of it. I think that to me, when I see a guy that does that, that gives me, you know, some hope that, and I think there's a lot of promise there. And if he can limit the opportunities, obviously when this is easier said than done, but limit the ball going out of the park, limit those opportunities, those misses at those moments, then I think we're going to start to see, you know, his regular numbers get a lot lower and really start to even much closer to all of these, these advanced stats. So I think that he's got to limit the home runs, like to be plain and simple. He's not the type of guy who can go out there. Gerrit Cole, Justin Verlander, like these guys give up home runs when they miss. They do it, but they don't give up. They limit that damage. They use the opportunities when there's nobody on base, or you know they'll take certain risks at certain times. But they don't miss in other opportunities when there's two runners on, three runners on, or whatever it is. I think that he is going to be he's still learning how to pitch again, one with new mechanics, and I think that he's got to get that confidence back so that he's able to limit the big damage, the big productive innings that the other team's happening. And I think that's coming. I think that's one of these just trust the process type things that he'll get to, because you're right. His stuff is good. His whiff percentage is there. He's getting swings and misses. Like to the eye test, his stuff looks good. He's got good movement. So I'm still very hopeful for him, to be honest. And he doesn't need to be great. He needs to be a number four pitcher.
Well, you compared to how Gerrit Cole gave up a lot of home runs. I'm assuming you meant last year, but he gave up a half a home run less per nine innings than Taillon's currently giving up. Like, and right. That was still a lot for Gerrit Cole.
They're
like,
no longer over two. I'm saying that there are very, very successful pitchers in baseball, was my point, that give up a lot of home runs.
Yeah.
But they don't give up big home runs. Usually there are a lot of these, the home runs that they give up, one, probably don't have that many people on base. And they were being aggressive in that moment where it was a calculated move a lot of the time.
And Taillon is like one of these guys that Yankees fans, in particular Yankees Twitter, has just gotten behind. And you know, because of the cancer recovery and the two Tommy John surgeries, like he's a feel-good story. And that totally makes sense. So that might also be clouding some of the judgment as we're looking at it. But I think right now, like getting back to the question I posed at the top, say Luis Severino was coming back right now and he was going to be a starting pitcher. Who comes out of the rotation?
I mean, if it's right now, it's a tough situation because I think Herman has also shown that he's able to come out of the bullpen too. So someone's going to have to shift to the bullpen.
Herman's been
very good. I'm not saying that is the case. I'm just showing an argument for a guy that has shown bullpen success. I mean, shit, Luis Severino has also shown bullpen success. So I think I had mentioned this somewhere, I don't remember when, before the season. Wouldn't surprise me if he came back in the bullpen, if the rotation was going well. Would not surprise me at some point if that were the case. I think I was thinking that could be a higher possibility if he came back later in the season. I don't think that's going to be the case right now. I think he's coming back to be a starting pitcher right now. He's throwing 96 miles an hour to Jason Dominguez on May 16th or May 15th, whenever it was. That's positive to me and leads me to believe that he's going to be a starting pitcher. So yeah, it's going to be, if Taillon doesn't shape it up, there's opportunities for him to go. If you're looking at all these guys, Kluber's going nowhere. Obviously, I don't think Montgomery's going anywhere. So you're looking at Tyone or Domingo Herman.
Yeah. Jury's still out, obviously, on Tyone. And if his actuals get too close to his expected, then we're looking at a great pitcher. But they haven't so far. And that might be only 33 innings. And that could just be a sample thing. Or it could be just because he's getting hit hard when he's getting hit. And that might just be how he pitches. And then guess what? He's going to have these differing stats. And you're going to look at it. And you have to use your eyes to understand. Yeah, he strikes out 9 in a game, but he gives up 2 home runs, and it's a 2-run and a 3-run home run. You can't. So, great. The 9 strikeouts are great.
He gets snake bit too often. He's got to cut those moments out. He's got to limit those opportunities for the other team to get you know a bunch on him. He's got to limit those opportunities.
So now, Bob, you're in a sticky situation because you're take committed, and it's like, do you want Tyone to pitch better? And then you're just gonna have to eat shit on that one?
100%.
Or do you want to be right? Because sometimes being right is more fun.
I mean, yeah, like if he's not cynical, I'll be like, if I'm right, I'll be like, oh, I called it. But like no, the thing
is, but you'll do that from your personal account, right?
Yeah. So that time I'll do it from my personal account. But the thing is, like the tweet came off in such a negative, harsh way. And like that I'm usually not that type of fan. So
they probably thought I was tweeting.
Everybody thought Andrew was tweeting. There's no doubt.
Probably. So
I wasn't even on Twitter that night. I was feeding my son. And all of a sudden, I get a message from Bob being like, sorry, guys. Like, what did you do?
Within 5 minutes, I'm like, all right, this isn't good. This is going to be a shit show for the next like 24 hours. And then the comments started raining in. But
okay, well, let's move on to mailbag questions. I will read the first one. We'll tag team these mailbag questions so we're not just all having Bob read everything. The first one's from Chris. This team has started a trend of not finishing series off when they have a chance for the sweep. They lost the last game of the Indian series, Astros series, Rays, and now the last Orioles. Just seems like they don't have their killer mentality. It just adds to the list of things that this team doesn't do well that elite teams usually do well. And I do, I mean, you can't complain about series wins, but he is right. They have had a lot of chances to sweep and then they lose on getaway day.
I mean, okay, but a regular season sweep doesn't do anything. I mean, yeah, it's a win. That's where it counts. But I don't think it's part of like the killer mentality of sweeping the Baltimore Orioles. That doesn't add up to me.
It's hard to have a killer mentality when your starting pitcher gets bombed out of the third inning.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of those, and you just roll in a whole bunch of scrubs after.
And they did have a killer mentality. They scored 4 runs in the first 2 innings, and Montgomery sucked today. So the offense comes out swinging. They get Montgomery a lead, and he was terrible. So
he was terrible leaving the ball up, but, you know, not commanding the zone, and the Orioles were all over it. And then they pretty much hit everybody else too. So no, I don't really buy into that. There's too many of those opportunities as well. Like, it's a long ass season for these guys. I don't think they're looking at every single one of those like closing games as like the killer mentality to sweep so and so. It's like, I don't think it matters to them as much. It's they're just trying to win the game.
All right, Scott, you want to read the long one?
Yeah. Next one is this is confusing. It's Jacoby Ellsbury, but also in parentheses, Jason Alexander. I don't understand that, but. Hey guys, we need
our guy Jason Alexander, not George Costanza.
Right,
it's,
I know, but I cannot think anybody but George Costanza when I see that. So I see Jacoby Ellsbury, Jason Alexander, and George Costanza when I read that. We need to discuss this team's horrific depth and roster construction. I write to you on a Friday evening with the news of Hicks most likely needing surgery and Stanton having quad tightness. The horrible lack of depth on this team is a problem. When we talk about self-imposed fiscal restraint the Yankees impose on themselves, most people talk about the blockbuster players the Yankees pass on. But I feel like there is a cheapness. Their cheapness shows when it's itself when, in fact, on nights like that, when they have to watch this team with half of a lineup or the minor leaguers hitting below 200. The Yankees need to look themselves in the mirror and realize that their injury history, philosophy of resting players, they need to invest $10 to $15 million a year in having competent depth on this roster. Brett Gardner turns into Brett Gardner, Ford, Higgy, Wade, Frazier, all in the same lineup very quickly with this team. I love Voit, but he has injury history, and it's not okay that his replacement hits under 100 or worse. Boone has to hit him in the 5-hole because there's nobody else. I write to you before we know what happens with Hicks and Stanton before the Orioles series, but I don't care if it's the O's in May. A championship caliber team does not have five guys hitting below 200 in the lineup every single night. This needs to be addressed moving forward.
The roster construction has been something that I think we have fairly criticized Brian Cashman on this season.
Yes. The roster construction is strange. And then also, I got to tell you, that this Mike Tauchman trade just gets weirder and weirder as the days go on.
Peralta's performing, though.
He is performing, but it just wasn't a large necessity for them to go out there and get another lefty reliever. It just wasn't. And Tauchman, maybe, you know, they either gave up on Tauchman because they don't believe in what he can be, as they did years ago. That had to be the case because they need another outfielder. They need another outfielder that can play multiple positions, and he was that guy. He's a lefty bat. He's a guy that has shown, you know, the Mike Trout ability within a month. He was the best Mike MT in the league.
Let's not even talk about that month he was off the charts offensively. He can play all three outfield positions well. He runs the bases well, and he's a lefty bat. And if you're just going to hit him eighth or ninth, that's totally fine. Now, I feel like there's something else to that we aren't quite understanding. I think this happened. If you remember, this happened when like Gleyber Torres was seriously getting questioned at shortstop, and they were like, "We need Tyler Wade up here, and someone needs to go, and it has to be Mike Tauchman because he's the only one that doesn't have a spot playing because carrying five outfielders is just stupid for a roster."
That's like a fantasy football lineup when you have a couple bye weeks and you got to drop one of your starters because you're screwed or you take a zero for the
That's what happened. That's what happened.
Well, I know when we were talking about this in the moment, the fact that they don't have a backup shortstop that's not named Tyler Wade is
three hits,
you know, their own doing. This is exactly how they drew it up. They've out of necessity, Gio is over there playing shortstop. But yes, Tyler Wade not on the team for a little bit means you didn't have a clear backup player at a very vital position that no one else can play on the team. Besides now that we see Gio is over there playing that position. But that was basically because they had to do it. They had to make that experiment happen. So yeah, the construction of the roster is very odd. You got Jay Bruce over at first base. You got, you know, with Voit out, there were multiple. First base has been such a question mark for such a long time until Voit came around. But there's multiple things happening with the depth. I understand what Jacoby or Jason or George is saying. And it's strange when you think back to like how the front office identified this roster and be like, yep, this is the one. This covers all the situations that we have here. You know, if so and so gets hurt, this is what we have. They obviously felt much better about Tyler Wade than everybody else on the planet does.
They also then picked up Odor, which we all love Odor, but he kind of also just clogs up the roster.
I think Odor was more of a, you know, an opportunity that they saw that they just wanted to take advantage of.
But he was added.
It wasn't really a roster. It was a lefty bat that was an available opportunity. They saw something in the metrics that said, I like this guy. He can hit home runs for us. Let's go get him for cheap.
But he doesn't solve a roster problem. He actually creates more of a roster problem with the defensive positions.
No, he does not.
Yeah. So it's very poor roster construction and management. And that's 100% on Brian Cashman and his department. It's just, you can't go into a season like they did. And it bit them in the ass, and maybe they ended up having to get rid of Tauchman for something that they didn't want to. Peralta's been good, so at least he has that to fall back on. But yeah, it was super weird. But they're stuck with Tyler Wade. They're just stuck with Tyler Wade.
Well, so that's here's the thing. Brian Cashman has done this multiple times. He's gotten the defensive shortstop multiple times. We've seen this guy, Brendan Ryan, Hechavarria. Like, these guys came in. Brendan Ryan couldn't hit for shit, but he came out there and played defense. Like, Tyler Wade fits the bill of the backup Brian Cashman shortstop. He does. They don't need to hit. No, Hechavarria hit well for this team, but he was not. He's a defensive guy. He's not known for his bat. We saw, I think, probably peak Hechavarria as far as offense in spurts. But that's not what they normally do. They have a defensive guy that can come in and play shortstop at times. The problem is, is that Glaber has was exposing himself at the position as well, and that made that that the backup position to shortstop that much more significant. I think that was the bigger problem.
And this is not Tyler Wade's fault, and it's really not the fault of Cashman, actually, now that I think about it. It's that if you just stick Tyler Wade in the lineup on a night, fine. But then when the four guys ahead of him, like Jason says, are all hitting 200 or worse, then it looks even worse. It's like you got Clint Frazier hitting 180, you got Brett Gardner hitting 140, you got Sanchez hitting 200, you got... So it looks so much worse than maybe it they thought.
There was a time when we saw the backup shortstop and he was a defensive guy and we knew that and nobody had a problem with it.
Right.
Because we knew that's exactly what they do. And that was a pretty consistent, you see that around the league. Like these guys have jobs for that reason because they can play defense and come in late in games and give a night off and you're not going to worry about, the ground balls that go over to the shortstop.
Okay, Bob, what's the last question?
The last one is from Greg. He said, would you trade Jason Dominguez for Max Scherzer, knowing you could lock him up for two additional years?
Scott?
For two additional years?
3 years of Max Scherzer.
Jesus Christ. That's a long time of Max Scherzer. If you have Gerrit Cole and Max Scherzer, you're winning a championship. Like you have a much higher percentage of winning a championship. Jason Dominguez, he's never played a baseball game. But he has faced Luis Severino. Do we know what he did against that? Do we know what he did in those 10 pitches? Because that might hinge this decision. I would have a really hard time passing up. Like the money's going to be dumb. Take the money out of the question of with this question. It's a really good question. If he's controlled for that long, that's the only way you do anything and you give up probably anybody for a 3 years of Max Scherzer, to be honest. How old is he now?
I don't know, Bob.
He hasn't slowed down one bit.
Can you look that up? Nice, filthy. That's why 36. When we talk 36.
36?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not paying Jason Dominguez for Max Scherzer getting into 39. No, I'm not doing it.
So I'm not doing the trade, but I'm trading for Max Scherzer and I'm trading every other person in the minor league organization, not named Jason Dominguez. I'm like, okay, Washington, you can take five of anyone pick, not named Jason.
It's not add more players to make it better.
Why? They could take their next, because they could take their 2, 3, 4, 5 prospects.
You're saying if they eat the money?
What do you mean?
Washington would have to eat the money.
There's no contract. He's a free agent after this year.
I understand that, but the second half of the contract for this year, does that not?
Yeah, you take the money on. Don't be cheap.
I mean, he's one of the richest owners in the league. So if they could get under the luxury tax, if that's an opportunity, then it's possible. But that's the biggest thing. The Yankees are not going to pay money to put themselves over the luxury tax.
They're not going to go over the luxury tax to make themselves the World Series favorites, because I think that would make themselves the World Series favorites.
They have proved that they will not do that. Right? I mean,
yeah,
tell
I
me,
mean, this
show
is,
me something
this
that
is
says
all
that they have
not
done, they've done that.
This is fantasy land because Dominguez is off limits. Like, I don't even know how you include Dominguez in a trade. Like you said, he's never played a professional baseball game. He's 17 years old. Is he even 18 years old yet? Like, he's so...
Yeah, I think he is.
There's so much time.
He's younger than me, which is ridiculous.
There's so much time. And he's like six of you. It's like he ate six of you. That's how small he is.
Exactly. I'm so, like one of his legs.
There's so much time before Jason Dominguez. Like he's got to go through so many steps. He's got to play high A ball. He's got to go to double A. He's got to go to triple A. Like 2024 is like best case scenario.
No. He's gonna go faster through the organization. Look at guys like Juan Soto. Was Juan Soto 19 years old?
Yes, the Yankees slow play prospects.
They haven't had a Jason Dominguez.
He's 18 years old. He just turned 8. He's born in 2003. Jesus.
So he's going to play
February.
Where'd they have him? They have him at low A, right? They have him in Tampa.
No, they
probably
but
just
he's
purely to control everything he's
it's
doing.
It's extended spring training right now. He's not playing games.
I thought I had saw at some point that he was reporting up to Westchester, but that was clearly wrong.
At some point, so he will by the end of this year, he will play high A ball. Okay. He's not going to, I don't expect him to be ahead of high A ball this year. Next year, he might start in double A.
Look, him playing high A ball this year would be fast.
Well, okay.
They're not even in... because in the past, there's like two versions of low A ball and now those are gone.
Can you let me finish? So 2022, 2022, double A. He starts in double A, okay? Right? Best case scenario. Double A has been labeled the hardest jump for a player because there's the talent between A and double A is the biggest jump, actually. Like everyone would think it's the majors, but that double A jump is very difficult for a lot of players. So expect him to be in double A for at least half a season. And then he could get triple A the second half of 2020. That means he finished 2022 in triple A. I said 2020, I meant 2022. Finished double A.
Very confusing.
2022. Yeah. He might get a big league spring training invite in 2023. Okay.
I bet he gets a big league spring training invite next year.
That would be surprising.
He's a man child.
He is a man child. That would be something. If he gets a big league invite in 2022, then we will see him by 2023.
Everybody wants to see it. So you mentioned that in 2022, let's say he's in double A. If he shows that he could play in double A, you just said it. It's one of the biggest jumps. Like multiple people have said this. If he could do that, he's going to fly through triple A. He's going to fly through. And again, if there is a need in center field, if there is a need in that outfield at that moment, they're going to see what he can do.
Well, Aaron Hicks is signed through guaranteed money through 2025.
He will just go away at some point.
How bad is that contract? My God, I know he's only making $10 million a year, but you signed an injury-prone player who was injured in his 20s.
It was opportunistic. I mean, if they waited, they would have sold. It was, if you look at the total value of the contract, it was, you know, it wasn't that big of a risk. The years look bad, but...
Okay, so final verdict, I'm not trading Dominguez for Scherzer. You are not trading Dominguez for Scherzer.
If this was 2 years ago, 36 years old, hell no. If this was 2 years ago, I would absolutely contemplate that.
Bob, are you trading?
34.
Are you making that?
Definitely not. I'm excited to watch Jason Dominguez play for the Yankees. Whenever he does.
Let me rephrase the question for you, Bob. If I could guarantee you two Yankees World Series championships this year and next year, and you have to give up Jason Dominguez, do you do that?
I do.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to. Two World Series.
Max Scherzer and Gerrit Cole. That's a pretty good.
But that's not. It's not guaranteed.
It's not guaranteed, but it's a pretty good opportunity. I'm just saying that's
World Series.
That's what you're giving up for.
Yeah.
You're giving up for that.
Okay, if you can win back to back World Series, which has not happened since you did it in the '90s, yes, you do that for Jason Dominguez.
I'm just saying. Sorry, but that's the reason you're doing it. You have Scherzer and Cole leading you the next 2 years. There's a good opportunity. You're going to be right there.
But I'm trading for this year. I'll rent Max Scherzer for a year and trade whatever prospects not named Dominguez, because I think if you could win a World Series this year. All right, that's going to wrap it up for today. We got a couple voicemails that will be tacked on here to the end. Thank you guys for submitting to the voicemail line. I always love hearing it. The Yankees are playing better, so people aren't as fired up, which is always disappointing. But you can get fired up in a happy way. Call up with happy thoughts. They don't always have to be sad thoughts. 646-480-0342. Scott, would you like to say anything?
No, I'm just happy they're winning series. So we're going to continue that train. That's the name of the game. Just keep winning series. I don't even care if they win the last game, as long as they win 2 of 3.
All right, Bob, watch out for those Twitter people. They get mean. We'll talk to you guys later.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.